Welcome to On the Edge with SICK, the podcast where we explore individuals and organizations on the edge of social innovation through a design lens. We're your hosts, Nita and Sylvia, co-founders of SICK.
In this month's episode, we welcome two coaches from Firefly Creative Writing. This is a bit of a diversion from our episodes to date, which were focused on design and its application within healthcare and social service sectors. However, the design process originally comes from creative disciplines like writing and art, so we thought, what better way to learn about design than engaging with creative experts, like the guests we have with us today? Firefly Creative Writing helps people reconnect to the pleasure and power of writing through their workshops, coaching, and snail mail available online and in Toronto, Canada. Firefly also offers BIPOC, which stands for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color specific programming that we're really interested in learning more about.
So today we're introducing Mary and Kim. For Mary, one of the keys to writing is permission. A turning point was when a Firefly facilitator gave her a slip that read, "Permission to call myself a writer." She loves writing 100-word stories about her life. She joined the Firefly team in 2020 and has created workshops for Flash Nonfiction, A Year of Short Fictions, and Permission Slips. Kim is a self-professed writing nerd and has taken every kind of writing class. She's working on a youth adult science fiction novel. She also began working at Firefly since 2020 and has created a novel writing workshop, a revision workshop, and a workshop for teens. Both Mary and Kim are working on dreaming up a romance workshop and a BIPOC speculative fiction workshop. Mary and Kim make two-thirds of the BIPOC arm of Firefly. So to start with, Mary and Kim, we ask all of our guests this question. What does On the Edge mean to you?
Well, for me, on the edge of my creativity means being slightly uncomfortable with my creative writing practice. So, for example, if I'm feeling both exhilarated and terrified, then I know I'm on the right track.
Yeah, I mean, being on the edge is something that we talk a lot about at Firefly. We're always talking in our team and also in our smaller groups about being on this learning edge, this growing edge. Mm-hmm. So there is that level of discomfort that Mary was talking about, which is super important. We certainly don't want to be jumping off the edge. That can just take you to way too difficult a level of discomfort. But we want to be near it. We want to be sort of right at the edge because that's sort of a sign of personal growth.
Yeah, that's a really good way to explain it. It actually aligns with a podcast that we posted recently, our Learning on the Edge series. So I like that.
So we wanted to also dive into your journey with Firefly. What's your professional background and how did you first get involved with Firefly?
Yeah, so I've worked as a writer and an editor for pretty much most of my working career. But before I worked for Firefly, I was really doing it for companies and for websites. So I was basically doing business writing. I was writing for websites. But I did start doing some creative writing late in my 20s. I was not one of these people. Sometimes you hear people who are like, "I've been writing since I was 6 years old." That was not me. So I started doing some creative writing children's stories in my 20s. And then I started taking writing classes as soon as I decided there or found that I liked doing that. So I took a Firefly workshop way back in 2014, and then have been kind of connected to Firefly since then through various different avenues that Firefly does. And I was feeling very nervous and very underqualified when I applied for the job back in 2019, coincidentally the same time as Mary. But lucky for me, they hired me and I've been working with Firefly ever since.
Yeah, so for me, I graduated with a BA specializing in English, and then I just kind of worked as a proofreader, copywriter, content writer for various companies, some nonprofits, and I was a subscriber to Firefly's snail mail program, which is called Hello Writer, since like the first month that it launched. And then in the fall of 2019, I signed up for a weekend retreat with Firefly, an in-person weekend retreat, and was just really in love with the work that I saw the coaches and facilitators at that weekend doing. So a couple months later, they posted a job opening and I jumped at the chance. And so here I am.
That's amazing. I love that both of you found your passions at different times in life as well. So Mary, you were a little bit younger and Kim a little bit older, I guess you can say, like, it's fantastic. So I wanted to also ask, what is the biggest challenge, the BIPOC? And just to remind everybody, BIPOC stands for Black, Indigenous, and People of Color. The BIPOC arm of Firefly that is facing you right now, the biggest challenge.
One of the things that we find difficult, maybe difficult is not the right word, but it's the reach. It's finding the people that we want to be coming to these programs. So the programs are for anybody who is racialized, you know, just finding those people, getting them to us. And we just want to extend our reach as much as possible.
Yeah. And just to add to what Kim said, we get such a jolt of pleasure when we talk to somebody who's like, I found you because I was Googling classes for people of color, or I was looking for BIPOC writing coaching or something like that. And we just are so thrilled when that happens. And I think also one of the challenges that the BIPOC arm specifically of Firefly faces is that we have to really build from the ground up. So there are various programs and offerings that we offer in the big Firefly community that isn't just copy and paste. It doesn't quite work that way for the BIPOC programming. So we really do have to, instead of just do the same thing that we're doing for the rest of the Firefly program, we really have to kind of think about our community and kind of build it from the ground up.
Awesome. That sounds great. And speaking of the pandemic, how has COVID impacted Firefly and everything that you do there?
Well, I feel like Kim and I have a unique take on this question because we started our training right before the pandemic. And so being online and doing virtual workshops has been really all we've done since we've been at Firefly. And so we kind of have a different perspective, I think, than some of the coaches and team members who have been around pre-pandemic. Of course, with COVID, we moved fully online when everything was shut down. And as Kim said, now we're just kind of starting to begin to return to some in-person workshops and retreats, but the majority of our offerings still remain online right now.
I had my first in-person class 2 weeks ago, and although I've been doing this work since the beginning of 2020, and it was fantastic. My biggest worry was figuring out if I was going to be able to like move my head to look at everybody around the room, which is of course totally ridiculous. But you know, I just had gotten so used to being online and you see everybody on one screen. And I was like, is this going to feel weird to turn my head and have to look at everybody? And then also have my class notes, my class plan kind of down on the table that I was going to have to look at. So there was sort of some strange things that I hadn't really thought about before that were sort of a new challenge for doing it in person.
It's definitely a completely different experience, I can imagine. Would you say you're more engaged in person or virtually with everybody since you're kind of going back?
Hard to say. I mean, I guess I've only had two in-person classes now, so, you know, to be determined. But I was shocked at how, you know, close and intimate it felt in the online space, because we have small groups, right? It's, you know, typically somewhere between 6 and 8 participants and one of us on the Zoom, and you just kind of really get to know each other. So it didn't feel impersonal online to me anyways. But it is nice when there's a break and you can, you know, because we always have breaks in our classes, and then you could get to chat with people, which you don't really get to do in an online space. So there are some definite advantages to being in person.
That is very interesting that you mentioned, sorry, I'm sort of sidetracking here, but it's very interesting that you mentioned that it felt intimate virtually. So I wonder if people being in their own homes and their own spaces made them a little bit more comfortable to express themselves. Do you see that happening at all?
Yeah, it could be that people might just feel that there could be something to that, that people just are in their homes and are kind of cozy and perhaps from, you know, the waist down have their pajamas on, which we, you know, fully encourage even from the waist up having your pajamas on. I'm all about that. So I think that that could be true. And lots of pets. I always love seeing all the pets over Zoom and getting to see all the cats, which you never see when you go to people's houses. The cats always disappear. So, I think that's probably true.
Interesting. That's awesome. So I just want to go back, and just ask you, are there any, or what are the key opportunities you see for design or design thinking in the work that you do currently?
Yeah, I'll start for this one. So I think that at Firefly, we have so many of our values and our really kind of like foundational beliefs that really speak to this. Like, we always encourage writers to just write as fully as they can. We always say there's no way to do this wrong. And so we really love to open up the possibilities for people. And for me, watching writers kind of unlearn the rules they've always believed about what good writing looks like, or even like what habits or practices a writer should have, and I say should with quotations, I think it's really great to see that there are so many ways and so many possibilities outside of maybe the box that we all, or not all, but we sometimes imagine is true.
Yeah, one of the things that we do is we have a what we call a connection call with new participants. So people who have not done a small group workshop or a retreat with us, we have a one-on-one phone call with them after they've sort of registered for the workshop. And in that, one of the big things we always talk about is how we do feedback, because, you know, we're writers, we're all creative people, and we're nervous about reading our work out to other people, people we don't know, haven't met yet, and what that's going to be like. And we certainly know that in a lot of creative writing spaces, it can be a really negative experience, right? There can be what they call constructive criticism, which I'm not sure I'm such a fan of that term. And so we really, in that phone call, talk about how we don't do that at Firefly, how it's really important to us. Mm-hmm. And we talk about this in our first class and in our community agreements. We have like a whole slide on this, that feedback is about, you know, we always say the best feedback is the feedback that keeps you writing. So we want the feedback to be positive and supportive and to really focus on what's good in people's writing, because everyone has strengths. Everybody has things that they're great at. It's never hard to find something good to say about somebody's piece, which is sometimes a surprise to people in that phone call. Sometimes we get people who are like, but coming from perhaps a university creative writing session, who say, you know, I want to know the rules of writing, and I want you to tell me, what's bad about my writing so that I can make it better. And that's just so not where we live. We believe, we always say everybody's got that inner critic. Everyone's already got that voice in their heads telling them, why am I doing this? Who am I to be doing this? Who do I think I am to be doing this? We all have that inner critic. So we want, you know, the other people in the room to be creating a voice to counter that voice, to say, oh, right, that line was really good, and that dialogue was so smooth and so seamless, and whatever it is about a person's piece. So that's super important to us.
That's really cool. It aligns with a concept that I heard about not too long ago, appreciative inquiry. So when you're working, say, with an organization to help them in terms of changing the way they're doing things, you're kind of starting where they are and you're appreciating what they already have. So I feel like this, what you're talking about, is similar in that you're appreciating someone's writing skills that they're already bringing to Firefly and then highlighting those.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I like that concept, and it just made me think of just creating a safe space for people to just be creative. Because there's so many rules around in writing and just even in art in general. And people just assume that they're not good at something just because there are so many rules. But I mean, those rules don't need to be followed. And I like that you guys are creating a safe space for everybody to just express themselves and be creative.
Yeah, I think also one of the things that is just really beautiful about doing this kind of work is just seeing how people can really design kind of their own map for their creativity and just really start to be playful. And like, it's just kind of the idea of like throwing paint on the wall just to see and without having a sometimes even end product in mind and to be spontaneous. And so I just really love the play that people get to do in this space. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not that all the writing is ever easy or playful or lighthearted, but just kind of having that playful energy, I think, brings a lot of energy to our writing and really lowers kind of those expectations and those inner critic voices and all of that kind of like capitalist productivity, all of that kind of mindset and framework that we're so used to being part of our daily lives.
As part of that, I think that we often don't recognize the things that we're good at because they're easy for us, right? So we often say, that's so amazing. I always get amazed by people's bright ability to, you know, write descriptively because that's not my forte. And it's so easy to sort of look at what other people are good at and be like, oh, wow, they're so good at that because I find that so hard. But we never turn that on ourselves and go, oh, well, I'm good at, you know, looking at what it is that we are good at and recognizing that, because it's just easy for us. So it just seems like, oh, everybody's going to be good at dialogue because dialogue's easy. So that's why we need those voices to be like, no, this is what you're good at, and to help people just see their own strengths. We often just don't even see them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Really good point. So we're going to transition to speaking about your experiences specifically with the BIPOC programming. And you did touch on it already in terms of some of the offerings, but how did it originate at Firefly?
So when Kim, Asifa, and I started at Firefly, there was already a class for BIPOC folks. It's called Exploring Our Racialized Identities. And so that was already existing. But when the three of us started, because now we had kind of a group of us coaches that were BIPOC, we were able to work together to really kind of create this arm of Firefly and bring our different experiences as people of color to create things that we really wanted to see in the world, that we wanted to be part of, and create spaces that we wish existed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And you mentioned that you were starting from the ground up. So what was your process around creating some of these programmings?
Process. I'm trying to remember how it first started. The first thing we did was a BIPOC stay-at-home retreat. So that was the first program. Although, if I'm being honest, previous to that was actually after the video with George Floyd, that we decided we wanted to do something that was specific to what everybody was feeling about that. So we ran a free donation-based 4-week program. It's not on our website now. It was just a one-time thing. And it was just me and then anybody who wanted to sign up came. It wasn't specific to BIPOC people. Because we weren't sharing, we decided that we wanted it to be open for everybody. When I say sharing, I mean people were not sharing their writing. And so I ran a bunch of writing workshops with prompts that people could, you know, take into writes of how they were feeling, how they're, you know, processing what was going on in the world. And that was, I think that was, you know, and that was sort of the first conversation that I had with Chris, who's the founder of Firefly, about doing a programming like that. And we had a big discussion of whether it was going to be BIPOC only or not. And then I think mm-hmm. from that, we sort of started thinking about, well, what BIPOC only programming do we want to have? And then I think the stay at home mm-hmm. retreat started, and then that, and then other things came after that.
Okay. And in terms of working with Chris, like, I think you've talked about your conversations with her, but did she give you guys ownership over the BIPOC arm, and how is that different from the larger Firefly programming?
Yes, she did. So usually anything that comes out from Firefly, Chris is really involved in and has kind of a final say and look over and thoughts about it. And with the BIPOC arm, she really wanted to step back and let us, the three of us, really run it. So, for example, we have a monthly newsletter that goes out to our subscribers who are signed up for our BIPOC writing space. That's a program where people join bimonthly to write, and we send a monthly newsletter. And so that's something that we write, and Chris doesn't even see it before it goes out. She just kind of, I think, gets a copy of it once it's out. And so that's very different from the newsletter that primarily Chris puts out for the big Firefly mailing list. Mm-hmm. And I think Chris is just super supportive, and she's just excellent at saying, like, that she wants to let us really lead, but that she's always available for questions. And she has just so much experience and has been doing this for 18 years. So she's just like a wealth of knowledge. So we do often go to her when we have questions about how to do something or what would be a certain way that we could make it work. And, you know, there's definitely lots of connection with her, and we check in quarterly to see how things are going and kind of dream bigger and go through challenges and things like that. So we work definitely together and with her, but there is mm-hmm. just a little bit more freedom for us to kind of do our own thing in the BIPOC arm.
Yeah, I think that's so important. Like, organizations, like, if they're thinking about having specific programming for certain marginalized communities, to give their staff or coaches or whoever is running those a lot of autonomy over those programs, because that's how they're going to distinguish themselves from the usual offerings, and that's how they're going to connect with those communities. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, like, are your clients or participants in the larger groups in the BIPOC programs, are they involved in co-creating any of these programs with you?
Well, one thing I can say is we have a new workshop starting in September. It's called New Sons, and it's speculative fiction. So speculative fiction is sort of what if. So it's alternate history, science fiction, fantasy. You know, what if fish could talk is Finding Nemo, and, you know, that sort of
thing. Oh, yeah.
So we're doing that for, and that is a BIPOC-only program. And the idea being that there's so much incredible work out right now about, like, Afrofuturism and sort of fiction where you're imagining a world without, you know, without racism, or a world with, you know, whatever it is you can imagine. And we sort of got that idea. We got the sort of energy to put that forward from I don't even know if I would say participants, but from community members. We had an in-person just social event, a bonfire in Toronto, and there was just a group of younger people. I think there was one person there who had never even taken a Firefly workshop before, but had followed us and kind of was curious to meet us and see what we were all about. And she was saying how much she was wanted a workshop like that. And we just sort of saw the energy for it. And we were certainly very energized. That's exactly the type of thing I like to read and write as well. So we were energized by it. And we'd heard from the community members that, that this was something that was of interest. So then we created that workshop.
No, that's a great story. I love how these things come out in casual conversations, things that are offline at a bonfire. That's probably even that environment that cultivates room for creativity and thinking about alternative programming. So speaking about the programs and the impact, what has the experience with these programs been like from your perspective?
So should we go through the different programs that we have? Would that be helpful? And then maybe we can speak to kind of each of them or just generally?
Sure.
So we've got our BIPOC writing space, which is 2 sessions a month. And that's a big group program. So anybody, mm-hmm. there's no like a limit on how many people can come. And there are sort of, we start to see the same people over and over again, which is beautiful. And, you know, and we've done through that program, we've done an open mic night once a year. So we've had 2 of those at this point. And we opened that up to anybody who's BIPOC. It doesn't have to be just people who are members who are subscribing. We've had people come from all over the world. There was, I think the last one, there was somebody from Hawaii, and she read a piece of writing and shared with us that was the first time that she had ever read anything she's ever written to anyone. So that's a story that
wow.
we hear not infrequently from people because they feel comfortable being in a room with people who are all racialized, and they feel more comfortable sharing than in other spaces. So that's what we want. That's what right. we're looking for. And yeah, that it feels really good when that happens.
Mm-hmm. And there's just such a giddy feeling for mm-hmm. us and our community just to be together in this space that is not defined by whiteness. There's often laughter and joy and lots of nodding and saying that that's so relatable or, you know, that kind of thing. And so we just really love seeing how these spaces bring us together.
Yeah. Before our first session, we had a conversation amongst the 3 of us. We wanted to ask people to identify themselves however they wanted to sort of be to mm-hmm. speak to the question of like, how do you identify? And we talked about it because that's a question that can be really difficult as a racialized person. It's a question, you know, I personally have gotten a lot, like, where are you from? And because mm-hmm. I'm, you know, visually hard to place. I was born in Canada, but, you know, I'm a brown person and I don't easily fit into any particular category. So, you know, it can be a difficult question when people ask me, where are you from? Or what are you? Or all of those kinds of questions. So we had this discussion about it. And the feeling that the 3 of us had anyways was that, well, when you're in a space where everybody's used to that question, everybody knows that question, it yes. feels different because it's coming from a different place. Like it almost felt like ownership to be able to say like, oh, this is what I am. As opposed to a more reactive feeling of like, well, what, I know what you're assuming right now, and I'm trying not to be angry about it.
I mean, speaking for myself, often when I'm asked a question like, where are you from? The intention behind that, especially if it's coming from a white person, is why are you not white or why are you different? And so when we're in a room of BIPOC folks, where are you from or how do you identify? The intention behind it that we feel is connection and solidarity and mm-hmm. And so it's a totally different feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. Definitely been asked that. Where are you from? And I'll say Toronto. And then I'll be like, no, where are you really from? Exactly. Because they're, you know, looking at the brown skin and wondering what your origins are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you guys work a lot with diverse communities, and obviously you are diverse yourselves and definitely have a lot of empathy for those communities. But how would you recommend that other organizations embed diversity and inclusion within their organizations? Because this obviously comes up a lot, especially now. You mentioned George Floyd and the issues around racism in the US, and obviously we feel it here in Canada. So what do you think organizations really need to start doing or continue doing if they're already doing it to become more diverse and inclusive?
Well, one thing is something that you've already touched upon, is that it really needs to be led by the people who identify as that in that group or that community. So for us, you know, our BIPOC programming is led by three BIPOC coaches. And so that's really important to Firefly. And I can imagine the same being true for kind of any organization.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other thing I would say, when we first started doing the program, the BIPOC writing space, some issues came up that we were dealing with and we didn't know how to handle it. And Chris suggested that we have a session with a Firefly, like anti-racism trainer who is a therapist as well. And we do individual therapy sessions with her as we need to. And Chris suggested that we do a session, the three of us do a session with her to talk about some of those things that were coming up while we were doing the program. And that one session really helped us land on a language that we call the spectrum of safety and freedom. And what that is, before every single session that when we get started with the BIPOC writing space, we talk about the spectrum and our own individual choice of where we want to be on it. So what the spectrum means is that, you know, as BIPOC humans, and I think as humans in general, we're always on the spectrum of safety and freedom. So sometimes if we want to say something that's really tough, if we want to say something that's like deep from our hearts, there's a risk in that. And so in order to have that freedom, we have to give up some safety. We have to take that risk, right? So that's sort of the one end of the spectrum. But at other times, you know, maybe we just don't want to say that risky thing. Maybe we just don't want to go out on that ledge and say the tough thing, the thing that maybe other people don't want to hear. And so we want to choose our own safety over that freedom. And that's okay as well. So we always reiterate that in our sessions, because we might bring some topics that can be difficult. And we want people who come not to feel like they have to write about being BIPOC or racism or difficult things. If you want to come and write about, you know, floating in the ocean, we want you to do that. And to make choices for, you know, every person who comes to the session to make choices for themselves. So that's super important to us. And I think that's something that it would be wonderful for organizations to bring that kind of thinking into their programming.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to start wrapping up this episode. We just have a couple more questions for you two. What are some key takeaways that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
So one of them, which has been sort of an issue of mine, certainly something that I've talked a lot about at Firefly, is that it's not possible to make safe spaces. I think you hear a lot, you know, in other groups or places that you'll go, like, oh, this is a safe space. But you can't actually say that. It's not possible to make 100% safe space. There's a lot of people in the room. And, you know, everybody's coming from different places and different situations and have different thoughts and beliefs. And we can't control what other people are doing in their room, which means that we can't make it sure that it's 100%. We can't guarantee that safety. But the idea, we do talk about creating as safe as possible spaces. And we do that by setting some ground rules, by setting some agreements with each other about what it is we're doing there and what it is we want to get out of our time together. So that's, I think, a super important takeaway.
I think another important takeaway is that whatever the limitations the organization or group has, that we can really see those as opportunities to be creative. So, you know, at Firefly, we think about what are some of the things that we could do that get us out there and don't necessarily have to cost money. So we've talked about like some free pop-up things or pay what you can, or, you know, just small little things. And, you know, like that bonfire is a beautiful example that Kim was mentioning earlier. So there's lots of opportunities to be creative, I think, and embracing trial and error and knowing that you don't have to get it perfect at first, but it's worth trying, I think is so important. And I wish that more people felt that way in this important work.
I love those. Those are great. And how can our listeners connect with Firefly?
So one way would be through our website, which is fireflycreativewriting.com.
We're also on Instagram, super active Instagram account. So that's also Firefly Creative Writing.
And on Facebook as well.
So thanks for being here today, Kim and Mary. This interview was great. I felt like I learned a lot today. So thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to On the Edge with your hosts, Nita and Sylvia. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others or drop a comment and rating. Head over to sickhealth.ca to learn more about SICK and check out all the links and resources in the episode show notes. Thanks and stay tuned for future podcast episodes with On the Edge with SICK.